Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, Text 50. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Swayam Nishreyasam Vidvan.
Swayam Nishreyasam Vidvan.
Swayam Nishreyasam Vidvan.
Swayam Nishreyasam Vidvan.
Navak Yajnaya Karmahi. Navak yajnaya karmahi. Narati rogino patyam.
Narati rogino patyam.
Narati rogino patyam.
Narati rogino patyam.
Vanchato pi bishaktama.
Vanchato pi bishaktama.
Vanchato pi Vishaktama.
Swayam Nishaya Samvidvan.
Swayam Nishaya Samvidvan.
Na Bhaktyaknaya Karmahi.
Na Bhaktyaknaya Karmahi.
Narati Rogino Patyam.
Narati Rogino Patyam.
Vanchato Pi Vishaktama.
Any ladies? Swayam personally. Nishreyasam. The supreme goal of life. Namely, the means of obtaining ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Namely, the means of obtaining ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Na.
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 Vakti.
Vakti.
Teachers.
Teachers.
Agyaya.
Agyaya.
Unto a foolish person.
Unto a foolish person.
Not conversant.
Not conversant.
With the ultimate goal of life.
With the ultimate goal of life.
Karma,
karma,
fruit of activities.
Fruit of activities.
He,
indeed.
Indeed.
Na,
na,
not.
Rati,
rati,
administers.
Administers.
Rogina,
rogina,
unto the patient. Apatyam,
something
unconsumable.
Something unconsumable.
Vanchata, desiring.
Desiring.
Api,
api,
although.
Although.
Bishaktama,
bishaktama,
an experienced physician. Translation: a pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. Purport: here is the difference between the benedictions awarded by the demigods and those awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotees of the demigods ask for benedictions simply for sense gratification, and therefore they have been described in Bhagavad Gita 7:20 as bereft of intelligence. Kamais tarstar hita gana papadyantain yadevata tam tam niyamam astaya prakritya niyatasvaya. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their natures. Conditioned souls are generally bereft of intelligence because of profound desires for sense gratification. They do not know what benedictions to ask. Therefore, non-devotees are advised in the Shastra to worship various demigods to achieve material benefits. For example, if one wants a beautiful wife, he's advised to worship Uma or Goddess Durga. If one wants to be cured of a disease, he's advised to worship the sun god. All requests for benedictions from the demigods, however, are due to material lust. The benedictions will be finished at the end of the cosmic manifestation along with those who bestow them. I'm going to ask questions about the purport, so listen, and I'll call on people. I'm joking, but that's what Bori Jampa says. I'm too soft on it. But it's a good idea, right? The benedictions will be finished at the end of the cosmic manifestation along those who bestow them. If one approaches Lord Vishnu for benedictions, the Lord will give him a benediction that will help him to return home back to Godhead. This is also confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 10.10. Tesham satatayuktanam bhajatam prittipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna instructs the devotee who constantly engages in his service how to approach him at the end of his material body. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, janma karma chame divyam avyam yo veti tatvataha chaktvadeham purna janma naiti mam eti surjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. This is the benediction of Lord Vishnu, Krishna. After giving up his body, a devotee returns home back to Godhead. A devotee may foolishly ask for material benedictions, but Lord Krishna does not give such benedictions despite the devotee's prayers. Therefore, people who are very attached to material life do not generally become devotees of Krishna or Vishnu. Instead, they become devotees of the demigods. Kamastaistar hitagyana papadyante yadevita. The benedictions of the demigods, however, are condemned in Bhagavad Gita. Antavatu phalam tesham tadbhavat yalpamedasam. Quote, men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. A non-Vaishnava, one who is not engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered a fool with a small quantity of brain substance. Not only a fool. Om Gana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksuran Mulatamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadhati Sapadantikam Vanshakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So instead of calling on you, I'll let you volunteer. Just one or two persons. Anybody remember anything from the purport they'd like to share?
Generally, those who want material benefits don't become devotees of the Krishna or Vishnu. It's not really that generally changes.
Yeah, very good. Those who are devotees of Krishna don't ask for material benefits. So those who want material benefits generally don't become devotees of Krishna. One more person? Alex.
You mentioned that by constantly engaging in devotional service and trying to serve Krishna, then he gives puri yoga.
Yeah, he's paraphrasing the verse that was quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajato. So this verse is really, and it's a lot there in the Shastra. There's a comparison between what you should do and what you should not do. What is the duty of a man who's about to die? What should he not do? So here there's a comparison of benedictions. All right, objectives. Or goals. So now I can just quickly, you can't think, I'll just give you a test on what your goal is, okay? You got to fill out the sentence really sincerely, really quickly. I will be happy when? Yeah, I know, right? I will be happy when? Right? You could have got $1 billion and you just asked for love of Godhead. Tamal Krishnamurti said that, you know, we always think in the future things will get better, but they only get worse. Yeah. Everything is based on our goal. That's the most important thing. The most important thing is having the proper goal. Because if you have the wrong goal, then you waste your whole life. And that's the greatest benediction, is to get the right goal. You know, one time I was staying with Kastuba. He's very kind to let me stay in his apartment. And at that time, he was connected with the Broome Street Temple. And they were hosting one of Krishnanamacharya's main followers. His name is A.G. Mohan, and he was like a perfect Brahmin. So Kastuba said, you know, he was kind of the host. He said, I have to pick him up and take him to his lecture at the Broome Street Temple. Why don't you come with me? So I came, and he was such a nice man, humble, a perfect Brahmin. And he said, come, you can come to the lecture. And I said, well, I'll come at the beginning, because actually Radhanath Swami was giving another lecture here. So I said, I can stay for the beginning of the lecture. But the beginning of his lecture on the Yoga Sutra was so brilliant. You know, you just love people who are deep and scholarly. You know, they're just so... He asked the audience three questions, and they set up the lecture so nicely. And I always often ask these three questions when I lecture outside. It's, you know, and they all have to do with the proper goal. You know, first of all, he says, have you found what you're looking for? Right? So then, you know, three quarters of the audience is already finished right there. Right? But then some people may say yes. Right? And then he asks the next question. Is it eternal? Because if your goal is not eternal, you're asking for the wrong thing. Because it's going to be filled with duality. That even if you're aspiring for it, even if you get it, there's always that duality that it's temporary and it's going to be lost. And then, of course, the third question, which led into the Yoga Sutras, what I thought was very brilliant, you may say yes, right? And many examples, right? I found Jesus, that's eternal. You know, I found yoga, that's also an eternal goal. But you're not there yet. Are you always with or living with your goal? And that's what yoga is. Yoga is to live within the self, always. And that's us. We have the right goal, but are we always living with it? That's another point. That's the practice. But so having the right goal is not enough. But without the right goal, then everything is useless. You have to have the right goal. And and what your goal is in Krishna consciousness, that is called Shraddha, or faith. Prabhupada defines faith so beautifully. Faith is unflinching trust in something sublime. And most people say, I will be happy when? In the future. In the future. When I use this phrase often, but it seems to be when the world conforms to my desires. But even if that happens, there's two things. It's temporary, and even if the world can conform to your desires eternally, so what? That's still not happiness. Because happiness is consciousness. It's not just things. And that's also the Bible. Jesus Christ says, what profit a man? He gains the whole world and he loses his soul. There's also a verse in the Bhagavatam, Chakva Swadharmam Charanam Bhajam Hare Bhajana. What's the rest of it, Jai? You don't know? Okay. Yeah, if you give everything, and what is the loss? So it's searching for the right goal, and that's what real mercy is. That's the greatest mercy. That's our mission. Our mission is first and foremost to give the people the right goal, and in Sanskrit that's called the Bhakti Lata Bij. Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. To give the people the real conviction in something that is actual pleasure and actual happiness. That's our ultimate standard of compassion. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very interesting. In the first chapter, Arjuna is both praised and condemned at the same time. He's praised because being soft-hearted is such a wonderful quality. Being compassionate is such a wonderful quality. But at the same sense, if that's not combined with the right goal, then it's also condemned. Right, I think he says, "What asochan anvasochas tvam pragyavadam shabashase gatasun agata nanu." So, although you're speaking learned words, Arjuna, you're a fool, because the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. It doesn't mean that the wise are not compassionate, but they understand that the real cause of suffering is not the change of the body, but it's the wrong goal and the material goal that attaches you to the body, and therefore you suffer. My mother is still alive. She's 97. I visit her this weekend, and the sadness is not just that she's old and, you know, losing power, because this is what old age and death does. It crushes the false ego. It's the loud voice that you're not the controller, trying to make you the servant of God. But the what's lamentable is that there's a lack of Atmagyan. Otherwise, you see two people in that same circumstance of changing the body in completely different consciousness. So to get that seed, to get that goal, to get that objective, I even read in I think it's in Bhakti Lok by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he was describing that, and this would probably be like 400 or 500 years ago, maybe not today. There's not that much difference between a karmi and a devotee. Someone who's not a devotee and a devotee. There's not that much difference. You know, they're all pious, they're all religious. What is the difference? The difference is the devotee's goal and his conviction in that goal. So one could actually move in the right direction. So this is what's saying here. What is the good benediction? What should you actually give someone? You have to give someone the goal and the things that proceed towards the goal. And that's really beneficial. It's just like a parent and a child. How are you going to judge the parent's kindness? Are you going to judge it just by what they do at the moment or what the parent's objective is with the child? And how well what they're doing is suited to that objective? So here, this is trying to shift our consciousness, because we also have to admit in our own hearts that we also have the wrong faith. We don't have the mature faith, that real confidence that the highest thing is to surrender to Krishna and to make that sacrifice. And that's the benediction. And that's how that the question arose yesterday. You know, when God is merciful, he takes away. But the real thing, when God is merciful, he gives us that happiness. He gives us the soul. You know, I read a study of happiness. I mentioned this before. And it was such an interesting study on... It was a study on happiness, but it really reveals what is mercy and what is not. And it was a study between quadriplegics and people who won the lottery. And then they studied their happiness. And they found out after 5 years there was no difference. Now, initially there was a difference. Obviously, the people who were quadriplegics, they were very depressed. Why? Because when your faith is to conform the world to your desires, that goal in the future where everything is in place, you need power to do so. And being a quadriplegic is losing power. And then the people who were the won the lottery, they were very, very happy. Why? Because they had money is power. And I know if I said, you know, who would be happy if they got, you know, $1 million, everyone would say, oh yes, I'd be happy, but only for Krishna. But that's not the only reason. We actually all are seeking power to some degree, unless our faith really becomes only for Krishna, but upgrade to first class on the plane. So there was no difference, and why was there no difference? Because real happiness is consciousness. It's not things. And what happens, and this happens to us when the world moves rapidly against our desires, and we have that mercy of spiritual or transcendental knowledge. At least it's within us, and the world moves rapidly against our desires. Then we have to make a shift in searching for happiness from destiny to free will, from things to consciousness. We're forced to make that shift. It's just so natural. Because we're seeking happiness. So at least we have the understanding that there is a real happiness beyond just controlling and enjoying the world. You want to be the enjoyer, you have to be the controller. And so I assume that the people who are the lottery winners, let's analyze what happens to them. Well, you get more money. What happens? Your attachments also increase. So you're in this, basically, beyond a certain level of needs, when you increase yourself materially, you increase your attachments at the same time. So you're basically in the same level of distress. And I've seen that, you know, basically, 25 years ago, I'm preaching in New York, and, you know, people started to get married, and they were just scrambling to, you know, just to live, you know, and now they have good jobs. And generally, it's the same anxiety, because your attachments have increased. That's why one of the things that's an impediment to devotional service is atyahara, right? Atyahara payasas cha. Atyahara, to collect more beyond your needs. It's just your attachments, just it never stops. We see it in the world today. The richest people, then they have to become politicians, then they have to control the world. It just never stops. The same sense of lack is there. Of course, in bhakti, the same thing happens, but it's a good thing, because at the prema increases. When your love of God increases, you feel the same lack of love of God, because it's a hunger. But that hunger is love of Godhead. So simultaneously, it increases within your heart. The love is increasing, and in the same time that you lack it, you feel you lack it. So that would happen. So to the materialist. And what happens is, as your attachments increase, you get disconnected from the soul, which is the real happiness. I read a very nice statement about happiness. It says, happiness radiates from the self. It's not focused on the self. It's not coming to the self. It's coming from the self. It's a change in consciousness. And then what happens to the quadriplegics? I assume, to a certain extent, as you lose control, you start to seek a higher quality of happiness that you can actually control. And therefore, it winds up the same. And therefore, as we discussed yesterday, from God's perspective and our perspective, it depends on our faith. From God's perspective, happiness is this consciousness. And to give us this consciousness. And he knows that our so-called conception of happiness, when we, in English we have the expression, when all your ducks are lined up. Anyway, no one understands. Someone told me that. When everything's lined up, that's not real happiness. It's something that kills you that you get satisfied with. And God wants you to get out of that. And the example is given, and I also quoted this example before. The same experiment, they had two rooms, boiling water, hot water. They threw 10 frogs in each room. And then opened the doors after 3 hours. In the room where there was one room had hot water and one room had boiling water. And frogs like water. So when they opened the door after 3 hours, the room with the boiling water, the frogs were alive. And the room with the hot water, the frogs were dead. Because when the boiling water was there, the frogs jumped out. And when the hot water, they got used to it. They got used to a situation that would kill them. So that's basically the material world. We're thinking this is all great, but we know how much anxiety the material condition is. We know even when we get the things we want, how much anxiety we're in that we're going to lose them, and how many more things we want. And We're not the controller of the world, so we can't be the enjoyer of the world, and it's constant anxiety on that material platform. And in that situation, if you stay, God doesn't want us to stay. So what does he do? He turns up the heat. But when you have the faith, yes, what's happiness is changing my heart. It's in my free will. It's in my consciousness. Yes, that's God's mercy. I did a seminar on happiness, so a lot of those things come out. And there was, I don't know where this quote came, but it really sums it all up. The quote says, pleasure is the happiness of a madman, and happiness is the pleasure of a sage. Because pleasure means external, happiness means internal. Real happiness is internal. There was one lady in a concentration camp, and she was kind of, there were a few people that were in the concentration camps that got noted for being self-realized. And there was this lady, I probably pronounced her name wrong, something like Etty Hillison. And, you know, so she's in the concentration camp and behind the fence, and then her tormentors are on the other side. And then she said, when you have an inner life, it doesn't matter which side of the fence you're on. So happiness is inner life, and we have to analyze ourselves. How much time are we putting into our inner life? It's not that we don't want things, but not as our goal. We want things as the means to the goal. Without enjoyment, you die. You stop enjoying, the body dies. So we're not against enjoyment. And different people have different needs, but it's not the goal. When you make those things the goal, that's when your life gets ruined. Or when you reject them as the means, too. We need is kamesya nendriya pritir. The purpose of sense gratification, nendriya pritir, it will please you, but that's not the purpose of it. It's not that you shouldn't be pleased with sense gratification. Kamesya nendriya pritir, it's not for the senses. Labho jiva, you take what you need. Why? Jivasya tattva jigasa. Because you're supposed to realize the soul. And that's where real happiness is. So it says a pure devotee who's accomplished in devotion doesn't instruct a person to engage in fruitive activity for material enjoyment. Not to speak of helping him. An experienced physician doesn't give things that are enjoyable that will do harm. And therefore, you were saying, that's the point. If you want material enjoyment, if that is your goal and that is your objective, you're in the wrong religion. And that's the second verse of the Bhagavatam. Dharma projita kaitavotra niram paramo nimatsara nam satam. That, and it really fits into this verse, that the Bhagavatam doesn't give that type of religion that you execute it to get material things. It's for those who are non-envious. And it's very interesting, envy in that verse is related to fruitive activities. It's for those nirmatsara nam satam. Because it says it gives up cheating religion. So cheating religion is for those that have envy. And this is a very broad definition of envy. A very high spiritual definition of envy. That you want to get ahead. It's part of the superiority game of the false ego that brings you into the material world. It's part of the same game, even in the name of religion. And therefore, it's Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvandvamohena Bharata. It's born of desire and hate. So, this is the difference. God's benedictions and the demigod's benedictions. One is material, it's not intelligent. The other is spiritual benediction, to realize the soul. And when you have faith in Shastra, and when you have experience, and when you have taste, and when you understand what the goal is, then, and you have faith in people who present the goal, and you see people who exemplify the goal, then you understand and accept the sacrifices necessary for the goal. See, if you have a high goal and you're making sacrifice, you don't complain. So many people, you know, you go to university and you're in the best colleges, you're going to make so much austerity because of the goal. So you only complain when your sacrifice is not commensurate with the goal. But if you understand the goal, then the sacrifice is worth it. So anyway, the Supreme Personality of God is now telling the demigods that you're asking for material benediction, but that's not intelligent. So I did leave a few minutes. Does anybody have a question or reflection on anything?
Yeah.
A few of us have been discussing whether it's still, if we have material desire, is it personal to still tell Krishna about these desires, and it's just in a spirit of sharing with you know, someone that you have an intimate connection with, or is there no need to, it's just kind of the dirt of the mind?
It's very interesting. Our desires in relationship to Krishna, I'll just tell two stories. And in one sense, it's kind of okay. Because one type of love in Rasa Shastra, the love of a servant is, you are my maintainer. So let's say if you go to your mother, right, and especially when you're young, and you pull on her sari, and you say, you know, Mom, you know, I want, can you give me some food or something? It's also love. You know, it's part of the rasa of love. But in the same sense, there's some compromise too. And they have to be adjusted. So I like, you know, I don't like, but when I first came, it was that time where Prabhupada, we thought that Prabhupada was going to go. And he allowed us to pray for him. Right? So, but he put like something before it. If you so desire, Krishna, we don't want, you know, if you so desire, you know, please allow Prabhupada. Because we understand that Krishna is omniscient. He knows what we want. He's omnipotent. He has all the power to fulfill it. And he's omnibenevolent. And he's good. So we have that. So he knows, and he's going to do what's right. But there's something in that. And when desires are strong, you know, you approach Krishna. Another example is my god sister, Samapriya. You know, she was distributing books in L.A. and that whole thing kind of fell apart. And they were all dedicated, you know. And then they thought, okay, now I think I have to get married. So she came to New York and I met her here too. And I knew her family before I joined. She lived one block from me. So anyway, her father came. And then at the airport, she told her father, said, I really need you to pray to Krishna for me. And her father's a very nice man. He said, okay, what should I do? He said, well, fold your hands and repeat after me. The father said, Dear Krishna, would you find my daughter a nice husband? So I thought it was a nice combination of a devotee really having a need to serve Krishna, not just for themselves, but at the same time not wanting to kind of compromise Krishna's position, but at the same time express that love. So It's very personal. Intellectually, no, why? Krishna is going to... But at the same time, I remember one story, it was just kind of nice, that Radhanath Swami told me, and he can correct me if I was wrong, when he was sleeping up on that hill with Ramesh Baba, and before anything was there, they were very dangerous, like pythons and wild animals and dacoits. So Ramesh Baba was sleeping outside, and Radhanath Swami said, well, you know, isn't it dangerous here? He said, Krishna will protect us. You know, Radhanath Swami said, okay. And when he woke up, he saw that Ramesh Baba had a little stick. He said, wait a second, you told us that Krishna will protect us. Ramesh Baba said, well, we have to do our part. So I think there's a compromise. Okay. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Someone's telling a story.